You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Catherine Lacey's second novel, The Answers, Mary Parsons has run out of options. Faced with crippling debt and stricken with chronic pain and an array of mysterious illnesses, she responds to a bizarre job listing posted on a health food store bulletin board and becomes part of an experiment that tests the nature of love in a surreal adventure. BuzzFeed has named it one of the most exciting books of 2017, and Kirkus Reviews has called it startling and stunning. It's published by Farrah Straus and Giroux, and I'm very pleased it has brought Catherine Lacey back to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Was this novel inspired by anything in your life?
I think I'm always sort of working with things that have happened to either me or somebody I know, or things in the news or things that I'm reading about. With this, I think the idea was a bit further from me at first, but there were a bunch of different paths I took into the story, so...
Well, I suspect that you've experienced pain and had to deal with that.
Actually, not more than probably the average person. I tried this thing called Rolfing for my back, because I do have problems with my spine. And the experience of that, it was both very helpful, but also very mysterious to me. And as a skeptic, I didn't really know what to make of it. But my Rolfer's amazing, or my former Rolfer here. It's really great.
A review in the Huffington Post observed that in both of your novels, you trace the contours of a contemporary female trauma. Do you see that?
I guess so. I mean, I think it seems like we keep on talking about female trauma as if it's something totally separate from just human trauma. I think most writers write about some kind of trauma because that means that some sort of conflict has transpired. And so, I don't have a problem with talking about the female experience specifically, but sometimes I think that it gets overgeneralized.
Are there similarities between the female protagonists in The Answers and the one in Nobody Is Ever Missing, which was mostly, if I remember correctly, an interior monologue of a woman traveling across New Zealand?
Definitely the approach is very different in the two books, but I would say what the consistent thing is, which is probably just consistent through all my work, is that I really like narrators that are searching and unsure and curious, and so that kind of permeates the work more than a narrator that has a lot of authority and is just telling you things. Or
The Answers opens with Mary in debt and in a lot of pain. How did you get to that point?
I don't really know.
I wish I could explain. You didn't have to give her a backstory.
That's just sort of how the story sort of showed up. You know, and I guess her mounting debt basically was a sort of unconscious dramatic decision in order to force her to take this job.
But the only treatment that seems to work for her is a new age type called Numer Adaptive Kinesthesis, or
yeah.
PAC.
It's completely invented.
Rolf got you thinking about that?
Right. I started thinking about what could be a weirder version of this with even more kind of just unexplainable, bizarre aspects to it. So it's a little bit of a satire of the kind of, you know, cure everything, juice cleanse sort of moment that it seems like we're living under.
But also it drives her into further debt.
Yes.
So she wonders what order, what rules were there in the world, a body, and why did I still hope for answers that I knew weren't coming? Were these thoughts that crossed your mind while you were in pain?
Not so much when I'm in pain, but I just think, you know, it's sort of baffling to be a human being wandering around the world and not really knowing why we're here, or, you know, having any clear answer. I mean, people seek out different rationales. They seek out religion, or they seek out, you know, all sorts of different authorities that people invite into their lives in order to have some kind of sense of security. But I don't really think, none of it's really true. And so you do have to kind of wander. Even if you're having a great day, you still are kind of, I kind of marvel at the world, and I find it very bizarre and curious, and so.
We all hope for the answers or some kind of rational explanation, even when we know there isn't one, because it's comforting.
Right.
We also gradually learn more about Mary's background. She describes her parents as living off the grid. Where is she from?
She's from rural Tennessee.
You're from Mississippi?
I'm actually from Mississippi, yes.
Close enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Her father is this kind of would-be sort of... he's trying to write a manifesto. He thinks he has something to say about modern Christianity and that it should be something closer to anarchy. I drew a lot for that character from a book by Tolstoy's last book, mm-hmm. The Kingdom of God is Within You. And in that book, he's kind of arguing for living off the grid, for disobeying your government, for that's really the only true way to follow Christ. I mean, I just found that very perplexing because it obviously is very, very different than kind of mainstream modern Christianity as it is in America right now. That idea really kind of grew that character. But in that, I think the kind of emotional underpinning of that character was my own sort of extremism as a child. Like I read the Bible as a fact as when I was a kid, and that's not really, I didn't grow up in a family that treated it in such a way, but my own sort of extremism influenced that character.
You reveal the details about her personal life in a very gradual pace. Was that deliberate? Was it more, how important was the speed of the narrative for you?
You know, I'm kind of an idiot when it comes to designing a book from the top down. To me, it's a much more intuitive thing. I don't really decide, oh, I need to pace out her backstory or whatever. Like, it's actually just sort of...
When it comes up, it comes up.
Yeah.
She responds to an ad in on a health food store bulletin board, which is kind of vague, the ad. And after a series of interviews, she's hired. She's going to be it's for the girlfriend experiment,
right? She's hired as the you can call it either, and they call it both in the book, but she's hired as the emotional girlfriend in this kind of half experiment, half scientific inquiry into the nature of love that is being organized by an eccentric actor who has hired a bunch of scientists to bring in this technology to study all these different women that have been hired to kind of orbit around him. It's a ridiculous conceit. I can admit that.
Well, how'd you come up with it? Do you come up with Kurt Sky? Is he based on anybody?
Probably based on just a little bit of most men that I know.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
No, I mean, not necessarily in a bad way, but, I don't know. I had this idea of this man, trying to control his life, trying to control his emotional life somehow. And that was really kind of the beginning of it. Somebody that was using their authority and their money to create some sort of perfect situation, which is just impossible to find.
My guest is Catherine Lacey. Her novel, The Answers, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. So as she said, she's hired as the emotional girlfriend. What does her job involve, and why is she perhaps the perfect person for that role?
Well, it's very measured. She has basically a script for every interaction that she has with Kurt. And the reason that she's the ideal person to provide this sort of weird emotional support that Kurt wants is that she's never heard of him. She doesn't know who he is. And he hasn't met somebody who doesn't know who he is in years, since he was a child, because he was a child actor and immediately famous. And everyone acts like they already know him, but nobody really does. And that's kind of his struggle in trying to form a relationship with someone else.
So to some degree, all of this grows out of his being an actor and thinking about how you interact with different people. And he gets a woman to perform a different role. There's intimacy, sex.
There's a whole team of women for that.
Mundanity.
There's
being
just a
available.
Woman that kind of is
anger.
Around
he
the
wants
house.
Somebody to yell at him.
Yes, yes. I wanted somebody to yell at him eventually. So this anger girlfriend came up partially out of my interest in women's mixed martial arts and boxing. She's a very powerful and self-assured woman, so she's perfect to beat him up and yell at him.
And there's even maternal, somebody
right.
who folds laundry and does things like that.
Right.
you dealing with the ways in which we compartmentalize and label people, even our romantic partners?
To some degree, you know, these, it seems like a ridiculous idea, this experiment in which every different role of a girlfriend is broken down into its parts, and there's different rules for these different modes of being. But in some ways, these rules become unspoken in a relationship. You just sort of, you come up with your habits and rules and patterns with your partner. So,
well, in creating this, you also have a lot of humor.
I guess
it opens it up to a lot of humor.
That's good to hear.
In the dialogue, in Mary's observations, the idea of the concept of the girlfriend experiment itself, does the humor just come to you naturally?
I think for this story at least, the kind of satirical aspect of it, it had to be there, you know.
In one scene, Kurt gets the idea to invite a few of the women out and then doesn't show up to observe what happens.
Right. He somehow thinks there would be something for the scientists to learn from studying the brain of somebody who knows that they're standing somebody up. They're making somebody wait on them. And he thinks studying the brain of the person waiting and studying the brain of the person who knows this person is waiting on them, that will somehow reveal something. I mean, it's pretty short-sighted, and the scientists kind of think it's not a good idea, but they go along with it anyway, so...
And there are a lot of experiments that seem silly at first have furthered our scientific knowledge.
Right, and that would be kind of the argument of some of the researchers there, that they don't really know what they're doing. They sort of treat their science as if it's a kind of creativity.
Mary feels physical pain very deeply, but she seems emotionally numb and distant. What did she feel about love?
Well, she didn't really have so many good models growing up, and I think she's a character that is at a distance from the world. And I just think those characters are more interesting to write, because if you have somebody who's just well-adjusted and happy about everything, then they don't really tell you anything interesting or challenging. So I just gravitate towards those kinds of characters.
There's a pervasive sense of loneliness and isolation in the novel.
Is there?
you didn't feel that?
I didn't particularly feel that with this one. The first novel was much more emotionally exhausting for me to write. This one was, I don't find it quite as, I mean, I think that, you know, if a reader has that experience, then that experience is there and it's a part of the book, but I don't necessarily see that.
Mary ends up leaving the reader with more questions than answers.
That's what some people say too. I do think there actually is kind of an answer in the book. It's just, it's a more oblique one. It's not exactly didactic. It's not a sentence. It's not like there is an answer that is, you know, you can take away from it that's quantifiable and firm and, you know, one hard thing. But I do think that there is, in any book, there's a kind of diffuse sense of some kind of answer, some sort of firm point in the book.
Is Kurt Skye's experiment a male fantasy to some degree, or a way of living out a male fantasy?
I mean, maybe you should ask a man, but I think it's not necessarily gendered. I think that everybody wishes they could have some sort of perfect relationship, you know?
Well, perfect relationships.
Maybe for some that would be a correct path towards that or something, but I think, you know, it's much simpler than that. I think sometimes I write about the opposite or kind of inverse of what I'm actually trying to get at or that I'm interested in. So in writing about this very complex experiment that is, you know, a little ludicrous, I think what was interesting about it to me was that underneath it was just, you know, something very, very quiet, which is just a relationship between two people. Is just, it's a very simple, quiet thing.
Yes, also co-authored a work of nonfiction called The Art of the Affair.
Yeah.
Does that dovetail with this in any way?
Well, I was working on it while I was writing this. I was working on them concurrently. But that book is an illustrated work of nonfiction that I did all the research for. And with the illustrations are by Forsyth Harmon. They're beautiful. But, I mean, that book is basically trying to map artistic influence through 20th century between different artists and writers that had different relationships. I mean, I do think that, you know, it can seem sort of frivolous to take relationships and love so seriously. It seems like, you know, woman's territory or something that's not to be looked at with, you know, serious eyes. But I think that relationships are the building blocks of society, and that's, you know, they're ground zero for every, you know, large political event that happens. It really is about what transpires between two people.
Some men also take relationships seriously.
That's true.
Your first novel, Nobody Is Ever Missing, won a 2016 Whiting Award.
It was nice.
Good luck with this.
Thank
Meanwhile,
you so much.
Meanwhile, your next project is a collection of short stories?
Yes.
But thank you for coming by to talk about this book,
novel
called The Answers. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Catherine Lacey is the author.